Hello and welcome to the studio. I'm Lee Sellers and this is the Judges Roundtable discussion on service visionaries. So first, I'd like to ask all you judges, in your mind, what is a service visionary? Can we start with you, Malavika?
Yes, of course. I'll give my perspective. I'm from Verdantix, so we're an independent research firm, and we do a lot of tech research. So a lot of my examples and what I'll be saying will be pertaining to tech quite a lot. I want to make 3 points of what I think is a service visionary. The first one is a service visionary is someone or an organization that's digitally enabled. Second one is that they have a multidimensional perspective. And I'll go into all of the 3 points in a little bit more depth in just a bit. And the third one is redefining the outcomes for the client. So what do I mean by digitally enabled? I mean, digital transformation is happening at every sphere of our life. And that's very true of businesses. That's very true of every sector. So a service visionary not just needs to have a great understanding of the digital technologies that they'll be using to deliver a lot of the services to their clients, but also have an understanding of how to use it themselves to deliver better outcomes for their clients. So that's the first one. The second one was multidimensional. And multidimensional, what I mean is being someone or an organization that's able to communicate across the organization, so different business functions, but also multidimensional in the sense that they need to be aware of what's happening around them. A quick example here, ESG and sustainability is, again, affecting all our lives a lot. And again, all it's impacting the organizations internally, but also when the service organization delivers something to their clients, they have to keep that ESG and sustainability perspective in their minds. So in a way, they have to be quite multidimensional to work across the organization and keep an eye on the market trends. And the final one was about redefining the outcomes. And I don't mean you completely ignore the client's requirements and just push your agenda onto the client, but I think it's selling them a solution. So a good example can be in kind of a legal term. Somebody who's a legal aid might just provide you with some sort of an advice, whereas somebody might be asking you for a solution, you know, from the lawyers. This is what we recommend because we see this with your organization. So for me, those three are key for a service visionary.
Well, thank you. That was all very clear, Malavika. Sarah, could I ask you next, what is a service visionary to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my mind, first and foremost, a service visionary is someone who sees the immense potential that exists in service to, you know, really be a differentiator and a path to growth for their organization. Secondly, I think then that visionary has to be able to balance the demands of today's business with working toward that potential or that vision for what the future of service can be. And that's really, really challenging. It can be very challenging. I think a service visionary is making a lot of decisions with people at the heart of what they're doing. Firstly, customers, right? Because we need to be really transforming service and evolving service with customers in mind. But also the people within the organization, because those are the people that are ultimately going to carry out that vision. And that's a very important aspect. And lastly, I would say they're someone who is very adept at motivating and leading through change to, you know, really realize the potential of service. We're talking about a lot of different layers of change. And I think a service visionary is someone who can help their teams be enthusiastic about that change more so than fearful of it.
Well, that's really, really helpful. And you've both given three succinct points. So Ravi Chandra, let's come to you. What is your idea of a service visionary?
I think, first of all, I really like the points mentioned by Sarah and Malvika. So on my side, when I look at services and service visionary, the two, three things that come to my mind is, number one, somebody who envisions the future of services, has a bigger ambition, provides purpose, and brings leadership to galvanize the organization, your customers, to make sure that vision translates into execution. So that's number one. Number two is he's somebody who understands the current market trends, the current opportunities that exist, is able to create focus, and then ensure that the businesses that he's building, while doing this transformation, he's creating a profitable growth trajectory for his organization while creating a bigger value for their customers. And the third one is a service visionary has to pay attention and keep in mind the importance of people. Services is a people business. Understand how processes need to work around those people, and then how technology can help us deliver more, keeping in mind the value of people, what they can do more versus what technology can automate for us. So in my mind, those are the three things a service visionary needs to embody and bring to an organization. It's really a leadership quality. It's somebody who's a leader and who's able to, pull people together to draw on that path.
Okay, thank you very much. So people who have a multidimensional outlook, leadership, and the importance of people. Peter.
I don't think I'll add to the 9 points, Ray. They are all very good. I might just speak a bit to the context as to why I think service visionaries is so important to look at this year. I think we all know that delivering a good service has the opportunity to differentiate your business, yourself, your team from your competitors within and outside your industry. That kind of differentiator is so important now because, to Malavika's point, most businesses now have digitized. That element of differentiation is, fast disappearing. So we're looking at other things, and that point of contact for the customer, whatever that customer looks like, wherever you interact with that customer, that's the point where you really get an opportunity to showcase your product or service or even just the brand identity. And so when in former times service was seen perhaps as a cost, it's now a value, to use that oft-discussed term. So looking at it as a source of growth, as a differentiator, looking at the aspect of it in terms of being the front of house, the first point of call almost for the business, is so important. And then, to all points, being a leader. When we think about service visionaries, we think leader, and it calls into many of Hot Topics' top 100 lists, looks at leaders.
So I think all of you have said leadership's important and it gives you the edge. So the next point, Sarah, let's start with you. What are the key challenges that service leaders are experiencing?
Yeah, so I don't want to say there's a lot. That sounds very negative, but there are certainly some, right? I think when you think about an organization that is coming from a product background, right? So that's certainly not all service organizations, but a lot, right? A lot are on the servitization journey. So they are working to, really move beyond the legacy of an organization as being very product-centric to one that values service in that same way. And I think that in and of itself for some is still a big challenge. They may have a really, rich history as a company that produces things, but still be working to have service be a significant and equal part of the brand identity. So that would be one that comes to mind. Certainly, there are a lot of challenges around talent. That's one of the most common things I hear in talking with folks. And I think that's really a roundtable discussion in and of itself, because there are so many layers as to why that's a challenge and what organizations need to think about doing differently. But that's certainly something that is top of mind for folks. I think in a lot of areas of the world right now, with different degrees of economic uncertainty, that sort of balancing act between today's business and continuing to innovate is a little bit more magnified. And so, you know, companies are looking for ways to certainly manage costs and work smart without, you know, prioritizing that to the point where they're sacrificing their customer experience or their employee experience. And, you know, I think the last, you know, I would say is from a technology standpoint, I think that when I think just about the time that I've been covering service or interviewing service leaders, the advancement is so significant and the capabilities are, you know, so vast and so sophisticated. I think, you know, a lot of organizations are still grappling with the best way to put all of that together in a way that works well for their business and allows them to leverage, you know, the best of what exists in a way that's driving value and, you know, improving their operations. So those are the ones that come to mind.
Okay. So those are the challenges you see, being product-centric, talent. Ravi, what are your thoughts on that? What are the challenges for service leaders?
Yeah, if I look at our market and, you know, I operate in digital buildings, and with our solutions, we deliver sustainable, hyper-efficient, comfortable, cyber-secured buildings to our customers, you know, in different segments, from healthcare to life sciences to data centers to your offices. And, you know, if we look at the context today, we are looking at most of the Fortune 500 companies are looking to decarbonize their portfolio. They are looking at adopting assets that are going to technologies that are to cloud technologies that are cyber secured. They are able to deliver outcomes on a portfolio. So to deliver all this, number one, what Sarah mentioned, we really need competent, talented people. And not only that, we also want to attract talent into this industry that finds purpose and want to build their careers, you know, in this industry. And then once we have that talent, we want to make sure that we are keeping them up to speed with the technology innovations. The rapid pace at which technology is changing, the closeness with which IT and OT, you know, IT technologies and operational technologies are interacting is creating more and more vulnerability around cybersecurity and other challenges. So those things also our people need to understand, as an example. So to keep them up to speed, to drive them, is a huge challenge.
Okay. Would you agree with that, Malavika?
Yep.
Talent.
I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I think that's one of the biggest issues nowadays is skilled labor shortages. And why it's so acute, especially with the service industry, is because a lot of the service providers are engaged by organizations to provide that sort of a domain expertise, which they might lack internally. So I think to not have that, or to not have that sufficiently, can be a big challenge. The other one I want to mention, I think resonates with Ravi's point, is that pace of technological change. Mm-hmm. I think in the past 6 months, there has been so much conversation about ChatGPT and generative AI. So I think service organizations, again, have to reassess how that's going to impact, again, the way they deliver services, or do they have to reassess the way things are going to happen internally? I mean, are there some processes that might get automated with ChatGPT and these generative AI that might become redundant in the next 6 months? And to have that kind of a vision, that can be a big challenge.
It's very difficult. Things are changing so fast, aren't they? How do you think, just staying with you, Malavika, how can service be better utilized by organizations? so that they can increase profits, accelerate growth, and so on?
I think, I mean, everything is becoming more servitized. So it's not just about selling a product and forgetting about it anymore, because individuals, whether those are, especially customers, are demanding more personalized sort of an experience, and they want to be made to feel special. So it's, you know, when you talk about that, you cannot, yes, there can be out-of-the-box solutions for a lot of things, but if you want to kind of stand out from the crowd, I think, Peter, you was talking about that, if you want to add value, if you also want to generate new streams of revenue for your organization, I think services is the way to go. And we've seen it in the past that when you provide a service to an organization, or when you change your business model from just being about product selling to something of a services and a solution selling, you develop a better relationship with your customers as well. And when you add tech to that, you'll be able to deliver services maybe that you didn't think of before. So a quick example here again, you know, let's say you've got a machinery provider, and in the past they used to sell the machine and then that was it. If something happened to the machine, it was all reactive, sort of, you know, somebody had to be called out to come and fix. I mean, still, if my washing machine breaks down, I have to call AO or somebody to send someone out. However, by transforming themselves to more of a service-based organization, let's say they put some sensors in that machine, the manufacturer now has shifted their focus to more customer service, customer-oriented, because they can already look at how the machine is performing. They might be able to tell the client or their customer, actually, we think there is a problem with the performance of your machine. If you operate it this way, you'll be able to get better efficiency out of it. So that's already kind of building much more trustworthy sort of a relationship with the customer. So I think that's quite important.
I love that, you know, they're going to tell me I need to put more Rinsaid in the dishwasher then. Very good. Ravi, what are your feelings on that? How can service be better utilized?
I think there is no better way to build a resilient company than you know, focusing on services. I mean, I think Malvika said quite a lot of that. Profitability on services is 2 times that you can get on project, more than twice, you know, what you can make on projects. The revenue assurance aspect of it, you know, more part of your revenue is assured due to recurring revenue, and what that can do to your organization in terms of investments. And the third one, which is the most important, how close can you get to your customer? Mm-hmm. How deeper can you get into their processes? There's no other way. And when you have services as a stream, it's 7 times easier to build opportunities with existing customers when you are closer to them than selling to new customers in a greenfield project. So the value creation opportunity is just phenomenal. So this is where I think you need solutions which help you connect to your customers in a native way. As soon as you've sold the product, you're able to connect to the cloud, and you can have that unending relationship with your customer while delivering value to them, solving their problems, and it just generates revenue more and more.
That's good. Would you agree with all that, Sarah?
I would, yeah. I think that, you know, the crux of this is that today's customers really don't care specifically about products or services. They're looking for outcomes, right? And so, you know, I think what we need to be considering is, you know, looking at the customer value proposition holistically, and how a product potentially fits into that, how services fit into that, how technology-driven insights fit into that. And as Ravi mentioned, you know, how trust and the relationship fits into that, you know, it's a big piece. I think one of the biggest opportunities that should be top of mind is that, you know, historically we've looked at the frontline workforce's role, the field technician's role, as, you know, really a skilled worker, a fix-it person. You know, the customer, historically, the customer calls, something's broken down, they go, they fix it, they leave, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, really, when we think about what service looks like today and certainly into the future, you know, that individual is more a knowledge worker today than ever before. And the insights that they can glean in their interactions with customers and the insights that they can provide to customers that customers find value in, you know, that two-way street holds immense potential for so many organizations. We just need to make sure that we're thinking differently about what it is that service can do, and, you know, allowing ourselves to reimagine, you know, not only what the value proposition is for customers, but what the service delivery looks like, what the, you know, relationship looks like, et cetera.
Okay, thank you. Should we move on to the next point with Peter? Why should organizations consider a service transformation project? And what does success look like?
That's a great question. I think before I answer that, Lee, I just want to bring up some of the points made, because it is so important when we listen to the challenges facing service professionals, when we look at the opportunities that their good work can afford to their companies, it makes it so important then to find and celebrate 100 individuals, service visionaries, as we are doing, because clearly the talent shortage that we've described plus those opportunities means that more and more people need to understand, and I'm sure Sarah and Ravi would agree, recognise visionaries either in themselves or elsewhere and look to have a standard to work towards. You know, I don't think there are enough of these discussions around service professionals that actually look at gold, diamond, standard leadership in this way. So I think that calls into it. And to the next point then around transformation, it's so important because one of the major reasons for a digital transformation is for companies to become differentiated and become close to their customers, their networks, their internal teams, for example. And service leaders, even if they're not directly involved in those projects or outcomes, the skills they have, the solutions they use, the strategies they employ can still be made utilised across the rest of the industry. So I think service leaders service visionaries have a great opportunity, not just directly in their roles, but also to educate the rest of the business as to actually how to, as to Sarah's point, get the outcomes that people want, which is a really influential position. And it's a really exciting position, I think, for them too.
Hence this top 100 that you're going to judge all of you. So, Ravi, why should organisations consider a service transformation?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the trends around us, around sustainability, digitization, you know, I mean, and then if you look across Europe, what's happening with energy costs, which a lot of our customers are facing challenge on, there are opportunities out there that we can address today, but that requires a massive transformation, the way we are organized, the way we deploy our people. So it starts with outcomes. I think we mentioned that several times, and defining those outcomes and clarity of those outcomes in your organization, especially with your people and how they are going to deliver that to your customers, is extremely important. And that is a project in itself. And coupled with technology, you know, when you bring digital as a tool to support your people to enhance their services, they need to understand what role digital plays and how will that help them to deliver more to their customers and be their really trusted partners, which every service leader, every service technician wants to be. And finally, I think digital transformation projects, especially in services, deliver value. It's a massive growth value creation opportunity. I mean, if you look at financially, the multipliers of companies that are purely, you know, focused on products, hybrid companies that are doing products versus, you know, and projects, then products, projects, and services, and products, projects, services, and digital services. The multipliers move from 1x of revenue to 12, 15x of revenue. So you realize the kind of market value you can create for your company when you embark on a path like that. And obviously you need to deliver those outcomes that you commit.
Thank you. And Sarah, would you agree with that? What does success look like?
Yeah, so, you know, I think that thinking about why service transformation? I mean, there's two big things that come to mind. The first is working smarter, right? And so it's really hard to say why should a company embrace service transformation without talking about where they are today, like putting the specifics around it, right? Because, you know, companies are at varying degrees of already digitally transformed, right? Mm-hmm. But regardless of that, you know, I would say that the vast majority of them, there's some ability to transform, to work smarter, to maximize resource utilization, to improve first-time fix, to put more knowledge at the fingertips of the workforce when they need it most, to you know, have faster response times with customers, and so on, right? So I think there are, we talked about how rapidly evolving technology is, and that means that there are just immense ways to harness that to really take away from the talent challenges and deliver better experiences. So I think what I would challenge folks on is that with the level of potential that exists in service and the degree of innovation that's taking place, service transformation should really be something that is happening on an ongoing basis. You know, I mean, depending on where you are in your transformation, it's really more a process of continual transformation, continual improvement than it is a project that you do and check the box on and move on. I would say, you know, maybe too many companies have done that and looked at it as, okay, well, we transformed in this way, so we can consider that done and we can just go back to what it is that we do. We need to always be looking at, you know, how can we continually transform, get better, leverage the latest capabilities. And, you know, I think that success is measured in, you know, a variety of ways, your customer satisfaction, your revenue, and your employee engagement and employee satisfaction would be, you know, three of the top ones.
Thank you. And Malavika, would you agree with that transformation needs to be continuous, needs to be going on all the time?
Yeah, bang on. I mean, I think that's exactly, it's a very valid point. Though the other thing I would talk about is that transformation needs to be reflected across the value chain. So you can't just say, I've transformed this process, so it's been a success, and that's it. So I think it needs to carry through, and I think it links to that continuous improvement as well. Secondly, I think it needs to reflect on the people. So again, we've all spoken about, you know, how change can be quite a daunting thing for some of the people who've been doing things in a certain way, and suddenly change happens, especially digital transformation happens, and they're thinking, is my job at risk?
Yes.
You know, so I think communication about that transformation needs to happen. And that's what a good transformation looks like. So continuous across the value chain and communicated well.
And communicated well, yes. Peter, anything to add to these great thoughts?
Well, I think that what's been said has really been fantastic because, again, all these change moments, all these change activations point to the service visionary and their teams being almost at the epicenter of all of these great positive changes to a business. What I think is interesting, which we kind of touched upon earlier, was, you know, opportunities and challenges around all of what we're doing. Malavika mentioned AI. I think that, interestingly, you mentioned a challenge. I had it written down as an opportunity. And it just speaks completely validly about what we're facing. When we think about transformation, therefore, and continuous improvements, what is important within a continuous improvement is testing, experimentation, and learning, and that ability to sort of not just get things right, but get things wrong along the way, which is difficult. I think in the service position, that's the most difficult thing, because when something gets wrong, it's a customer that might feel the outcome of that wrong thing. It's not an A-B test or A-B-C test in pure tech capacity. It's the customer, so things need to be handled delicately. And again, just speaks to the challenges that these people face and also why they're worth celebrating.
Thank you. Well, talking of outcomes, We hear a lot about an outcome-based service model and servitization, word you used. How serious are businesses about making this shift? Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, I think hopefully they're serious. They should be.
Let's hope.
It's certainly, you know, what people are thinking about, what people are working toward. Again, I think people are at, you know, such different points along really a pretty big continuum. But, you know, all you really need to do is think about the way that customers or even each of us as consumers, you know, wants to experience things in our daily lives, the ease we want, the simplicity, the reliability, the level of insight. You know, those are all things that customers are not only wanting, but demanding. And, you know, I think the onus is on organizations to look for ways to, you know, really manage complexity internally to be able to deliver those, you know, those simple, streamlined experiences to their customers in the form of whatever it is their outcomes need to be.
Okay, thank you. And Ravi, what percentage of businesses would you say are already offering these services?
Well, outcome-based services, I would say even less than 10% of businesses are out there offering outcome-based.
Wow.
You know, we can talk about outcomes around energy, carbon reduction. There are a bunch of, you know, KPIs you can take and position services around that. But then it requires much more rigor beyond. And I've worked on this topic quite a while. Rigor in terms of, you know, how you are targeting your customers and which customers are you target with outcome-based services who are ready for those type of services. Second, how do you, you know, define the project in terms of the scope, the outcomes, the baselines that you have at your disposal, because outcomes is based on those baselines that you see in front of you, and then how you deliver that, tracking those timelines. And third, the competencies, especially in this type of project, to bring those competencies to ensure that financially you're delivering what your customers are looking for, and in the end, it's a profitable project. And an outcome for your organization as well as your customers. It starts with targeting, in my mind. Targeting is the most important, right? Customers to bring those type of offers.
Malavika, would you agree that not enough businesses are serious about making this transformation yet?
I think it depends, again, on the sector, the use cases. So as Ravi mentioned, and we've seen this as well, energy management is increasingly becoming outcome-based sort of a service model. There's a big facility management firm that says we'll guarantee 10% savings on your energy, and they use like the data from the building management system to do that. Mm-hmm. We also know of a lot of the AI analytics providers are doing that now. So they are saying to their customers, we'll come and install this piece of technology at your manufacturing plant, for example, and then we guarantee that you will make your money back within 6 months. Mm-hmm. Some of the other areas, I think electric vehicle infrastructure, again, it's quite a new area, but I believe we'll see a lot more of this outcome-based selling sort of a model there, again, because it involves the general public. Utilities are going to be involved in that. So there are many stakeholders there who need to be satisfied. There are, again, certain sectors maybe where this is not very common, but they are making the change. So I think it really depends on kind of the sector, the use case that we're looking at.
Thank you. Well, we've learned a lot as we come to the end. The challenges of technological change, skills shortage, and the focus not just being about the product, but on services as well and the relationship with the customer. But Peter, the final word.
Final word, gosh, what a privilege. First, that we'd like as many people to nominate themselves or their peers to the service Visionaries 100 with IFS and Hot Topics as possible. Again, it's the importance of sourcing, celebrating great talent. As we've already heard from my fellow judges, it is difficult to compare and contrast different sectors. So what I just sort of qualify is that we're looking really for individuals from manufacturing, engineering, energy, constructive, utility sectors specifically. And that once we have those wonderful nominations through, we're looking forward to having them at an awards ceremony later in 2023.
Well, we're all looking forward to that. And I look forward to who you judge and who you attract. Thank you all very much. Thank you.